Hi, and welcome to The Return, Property and Investment Podcast. I'm Anna, and in this episode, I'm joined by the Managing Director of the UK's leading modular construction company, Reds 10, Paul Ruddick. So he's built his family business from scratch to a turnover of 20 million this year and is aiming for 100 million of turnover in the next 3 years. So punchy goals. And he's well qualified to discuss construction, which is an especially important topic in property investment in the context of a lot of political uncertainty. So before we get into the market context, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
And what is modular construction and how is it different from traditional construction?
I think traditional construction is where literally everything's built on the construction site. So the bricks, the timber, the concrete, the steel all gets delivered to the construction site and it's built on site. Modular construction in its various forms is where part of that construction is built off site. So there's a number of different types of modular construction, and it's important to say. So first is kind of component construction. So you might build the foundations and the frame on site, but you might have sections of the external walls built in a factory and they're dropped into place. You might have bathroom pods built in a factory and they're dropped in. So that's kind of a hybrid form of modular construction. You then get kind of off-site construction where individual units are built, bedrooms or student accommodation. So that's the kind of units where they're completely sealed units, they're built in a factory, and they're kind of individual bedrooms. So a lot of them are built overseas. So you would, a lot of them imported from China, but also there's a UK manufacturing facility that builds them. My company doesn't do either of those two. My company is volumetric construction. So basically that's based around steel frame, a bit like a Lego block. And those steel frames are bolted together in the factory and we build everything in the factory. We then take the Lego blocks apart, we put them on the back of a lorry and then we drop them in on site. So I would say that we're a true modular construction company because we build 80% of our buildings in the factory and drop them in. And the argument is, and that's why everyone's getting excited about modular construction, is that because you're in the factory, you're controlling quality much higher. It's much more safer. But also in terms of time and program, it's a lot quicker as well. And actually, if you set the project up right, you should achieve significant cost benefits as well. So that's why that's really interested about it. We're not reinventing the wheel. Modular constructions have been around for a long time. But the big, massive game changer in modular construction is actually in IT. So what we're doing in the factory, you could have done in the factory 30 years ago and people have done it before. But the thing with construction is all about coordination. And what's happening now with 3D design and 3D modelling is that we'll be able to fully design the building before it starts on the site. Now, to the layperson, everyone would say, well, of course you build the building before you start building. But actually, you'd be surprised in traditional construction, do you actually design the building as you go along? And that's why a lot of the cost issues and program issues arise in construction projects. But in a modular construction environment, you have to design everything before you start on site, start in the factory, sorry. And from a client's perspective, that gives them cost certainty as well. So if you're a developer or whatever, you want to minimise your risk and you really want to kind of nail down on your cost certainty. So there's a lot of issues around modular construction, but actually that's why it's gained a lot of interest and that's why my business is focused on it heavily the last 7 years.
And that aspect of certainty is obviously a huge advantage for any investor, developer. And time and time again, you're thrown off by the weather, you're thrown off by an issue that's thrown up during the process of construction, but I guess you're kind of minimising that. Potentially, are there still issues or is it really just, exactly what you're getting into for a new
Yeah, I mean, and also obviously, because it's my factory, I directly employ all the tradespeople as well. So I'm in control of that. When you build traditionally, you rely on specialist subcontractors and it's very easy for one of them to let you down.
I knew that.
No, exactly. And because it's built sequentially, so if your bricklayer lets you down, you can't put the lighting that way. It just goes on and on and on. And that's why costs and programs spirals out of control. But modular, building it in the factory takes that away because I'm in control of my supply chain. I own my supply chain. Mm-hmm. I often say, actually, modular construction, you're almost going back to the future.
Yeah.
So 30, 40 years ago, it was a big the national big contractors employed everyone. They had their own bricklayers and carpenters. Unfortunately, through recessions, the main contractors now are like management companies. They don't have any direct trades, so they just have project managers. But actually modular is that I'm forced to employ people directly. I'm forced to accept that risk and take it on. But if I set the risk, then I should get some benefits from it as well in terms of cost certainty. And also in terms of training, in terms of kind of health and safety, working in a nice environment, it's the way forward. So, yeah.
Very interesting. I think there's a huge thing about that in construction, that the I suppose the attitude to employment is very different than in many other industries, because there are it's very highly fragmented at most parts of the market, and I guess you're turning that around in a way.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about the skill shortage in construction, and the model I just described of the current main contractors is that no one has to invest in staff. They haven't done it, they haven't trained people up, they haven't been proper graduate schemes, haven't been proper training schemes, because the subcontractors live hand to mouth. They haven't got a big pipeline of work. They don't know if the main contractor will give them work. So if you're a modular contractor employing everyone directly, I want to train my staff up because that can make me money. A qualified young graduate, a young apprentice, if I invest in them for 2, 3, 4 years, in 5, 6 years time, they're going to be very profitable and I can make money out of them. And I think people forget that. And it's been too easy just to pick up the phone and phone a recruitment company and send me 5 people down, and one of them might be semi-skilled, and everyone talks about the quality, and there's reasons for that.
We should dig into that. Should we dig into that now then? So tell me what you're doing about training, apprenticeships. So you've got.
Yeah, so as well as Red 10, I can't remember what it was now, but I think it's back 2009, 2010, purely from a kind of a personal viewpoint. I saw issues in the industry where young people weren't getting trained up and put into apprentices. There's a whole reason why that doesn't happen, and I think we're going to have probably a different podcast.
Okay, we'll do another one.
It would take me half an hour to explain, but basically what the issue is that subcontractors, because of, you know, say if you're a carpenter subcontractor, they haven't got, especially in London, they haven't got continuity of work, so they won't take on a young apprentice. But there's a lot of obligations now when a main contractor who does a building, say in Hackney, they need to employ local people or local apprentices. But if that subcontractor is there for 4 months or 5 months hanging on the doors, he's not there for 2 or 3 years to offer the apprenticeship. So that's that whole massive disconnect. And basically what we did, we set up K10 as a social enterprise to try and address that issue. So I had another partner, we set it up together, and basically what we did is we became a, what's called an apprentice training agency. We went to Hackney, we employed the apprentices direct, we still do, and then we just farmed them out to different contractors in Hackney, so, or whatever borough it is in London, so they get their 2 years worth of work. And that's, you know, if there was anyone said to me, oh, what's your achievements? Okay, I've got a big construction company, I'd say that's it. We've done a lot of work on it. We've changed, I don't know what exact numbers, but probably about 2,000 young lives in London who are now trained. And the thing about construction as well, and for me, apprenticeships, is that construction is well paid. When you do your The young students leave school, no one ever says about construction, but actually because there's a skill shortage, if you're a bricklayer, if you're a carpenter, you can make some real money.
Especially for a good one, right?
I mean real money. I think, you know, they did a survey recently, and they said, you know, highest paid young person in London is a really qualified bricklayer, you know, so everyone's gone to university and whatever, but actually they make more money out of it. And actually if you're from a disadvantaged background and you get that qualification, get that trade, it changes your life and the whole family's life, because you all of a sudden you've got this high income coming in. So yeah, no, it's really good. And we're now working at Heathrow, we work with all the main contractors, we've worked on the Olympics, and we're pretty much the biggest ATA construction employer in London in terms of stuff there. So that's kind of, I don't get involved too much in the day-to-day anymore. I'm a director and a larger shareholder, but it kind of ties in a little bit for what I'm doing with Reds 10 as well.
Yeah.
So in Reds 10, I'm passionate about actually this getting some more youngsters into the factory and train them up, because, you know, everyone knocks the UK youngsters, and actually they're a good hard-working bunch, and actually they just need the opportunity and someone to believe in and support them.
It sounds like an absolutely brilliant thing to do. So while we're talking about getting younger people started, tell me where you came from and how you got involved in all this, got the business started.
Yeah, so I'm from my background is I'm a chartered quantity surveyor. So I'm not a contractor by training. I used to work for one of the big practices when I left university and got on a graduate scheme, which was great. And it's a company called Davis Lang & Everest, who've sadly been bought out by a big American conglomerate now. So that's another sort of thing. No, yeah, exactly. It's a shame. I think, you know, that was an amazing company, and it's around no longer in its current form. And basically I worked with him, I trained up with him as a project manager, quantity surveyor. I did a little bit of other stuff in terms of education, project management. And in 2006, I decided, I had a brainwave that actually I wanted to start my own business. And so I sat up in my bedroom, and my original business was actually advising head teachers in schools how to operate their buildings. Because I don't know if you remember back in 2005, 2006, Tony Blair had the academies, and they built these wonderful 40 million, 50 million pound schools, were like spaceships in terms of, you know, and these poor head teachers went into these schools and, you know, they had quite struggled with their students, and they were expected to run the schools, they didn't have a clue to do it basically. So I just saw a gap in the market and said, right, I'll step on my own and hold the head teachers' hands and what they can do. And from the back of that, basically what happened was I started to look at how fitting out the furniture and whatever, and I said, I looked into it and I said, well, people doing it, I'm doing a very particularly good job, I can help you do that. So I started off doing that. And actually, I have another company called Apterius who still works in that environment now. They provide furniture for schools and universities and all that. But after a couple of years, I started getting approached by head teachers saying, oh, we've got a toilet block that needs refurbishing and whatever, and can you help me out? And I said, oh, okay, I'll look into that for you. And originally, I used the subcontractors to do it for them, and kind of morphed into actually becoming a small contractor. So there was no defined route of what I was going to do. That is interesting. Did that for a few years, and then in around about 2011, 2012, I got involved in modular buildings. So again, through my contacts, a number of schools wanted some temporary accommodation, and again I looked into it, and I identified a couple of companies that provided the service, and I started providing modular buildings, temporary classrooms on a site, and we did that for a few years. And then I think 2014, I won a number of large jobs, and there was I was using a company up in Hull to build the buildings for me, and the person I was dealing with approached me and said, look, I want to start up on my own in my own factory. Will you give me the work if I start up on my own? And I like the person, we got on quite well. And I said, well, yeah, fine, but I would like to be part of the factory, because if I'm going to be the major source of work.
Yeah.
So we basically took, I took him an honor minority share in the factory. He took majority shareholding, and we've done that for did that for 3 years, and produce some amazing buildings and really kind of pushing the boundaries of off-site. And then about 6 months ago, he's slightly older than me, he approached me and said, hey, I want to take a step backwards. And now I've taken over the factory and the majority shareholder, and I kind of run the factory. So yeah, so from sitting in my bedroom for 10 years ago, I now I've got a construction company with 20 million turnover, and got my own factory.
And massive goals.
Yeah, and because I don't come from a manufacturing background or a construction background in terms of on-site, but a consultancy background, then the company's set up slightly different. And that's why we kind of offer something different to clients. So we're kind of very consultative, forward-thinking, because that's my training. That's my original training. And, it's really interesting, because to become a modular contractor, you need the factory, you need the construction ability on site, and you also need the front end. And everyone who starts coming here comes from one of those backgrounds, and obviously I come from the front end side. So yeah, we're working some really exciting jobs at the moment for Imperial War Museum, for Barclay Homes, and we're doing a couple of MRI scanning facilities for hospitals, and which is lead lining, and you know, stuff that I would have never dreamt of doing that 3 or 4 years ago. But what kind of work that really excites me is challenging the perception of modular, because it's perception of 1950s prefab type units, cheap,
yeah,
and cheerful. But we've teamed up with some really kind of like leading architects in London, companies like Jessica & Wiles, HLM, and I'm really pushing the boundaries of what the modular can look like externally in terms of facade and finish, and also what you can do internally with it in terms of putting an MRI suite with radioactive and lead lined and pushing the boundaries. And we're building those in the factory at the moment. I'm not interested in churning out lots of residential units or student accommodation units with, you know, a long production line, because quite frankly, that's pretty boring. Mm. So that's kind of where we are in the market. And, you know, I'm trying to go after clients at the moment who I don't really see Red Team going up against other modular contractors, because I think they'll do a great job, and I don't see them as my competition. I see traditional contractors as my competition. I want their work, because that's where we can make the biggest impact in terms of time, cost and quality.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two or three jobs I've been up against tier one contractors, and we beat them. You know, it's a bit like David and Goliath, but you know, we're in there. So I enjoy that.
That's fantastic. So yeah, it's very interesting what you're saying about challenging the perception of both the aesthetics and I guess the practicalities and the use of modular construction.
But, you know, I always say this to clients, at the end of the day, my buildings are steel frame buildings. Mm. Yeah, they've got 30% more steel than a traditional building, because I've got to put them on the back of a lorry, transport it and erect it again. Structurally, they're stronger than any other building out there. So yeah, again, people think, oh, they're going to, you know, it's flimsy. I said, they're not. They're very, very robust. But it's just the... what I want to do, I want to deliver some great buildings in terms of the facade and the finish, and that's what we're doing at the moment. Yeah. So people can refer to it, because the industry are just our followers, you know, and I think once someone has done it a few times, there's a few reference projects, people get it. A lot of the architects are really coming around to it. You know, you could have said they would have been the Barrys in the past, but there's some real open mind. You know, I've mentioned Jessica Mars and HLM, who we're working with, who are really adopting it, accepting it and trying to push the boundaries in terms of what it can look like and detailing. And we're doing loads of R&D at the moment in terms of curtain walling and bricks and, you know, we just make it really interesting, different shapes as well.
Exciting. So, okay, taking a step back to more of an investment and development perspective, if I'm looking at, let's say, a development project and I'm weighing up traditional versus modular building, what are the things I should be considering, and how would I go about, let's say, a cost benefit analysis?
I think everyone says, oh, is modular or is traditional, or is it cheaper one on the other? In my view, when modular's got a bad rep at the moment, is there's not many contractors like myself around who basically are design and build modular contractors. So what you tend to find is you'll get a tier one contractor who will then appoint a modular company who knocks it out of the factory, and they'll just put margin top of margin top of margin.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll treat them as a subcontractor, even though they're doing 65-75% of the work. And that relationship doesn't work. It doesn't work. And that's why, you know, the main contractors that are not really that interested in it at the moment, because it ruins their business model. You know, I'm going to be controversial here and say main contractor's business model is premiums and attendances with all the different subcontractors, and that's where they kind of hide their money or put their profit in. But actually, if you have a true designer build modular contractor like myself, I'll say this obviously because
but that's fine.
It's not a pitch at all, you know, but you know, it's basically my only kind of market. So I've got the factory and I've got my guys on site, and we put it in. So I'm cutting out all different supply chains. I've got those subcontractors upon margin, upon margin, upon margin. So I'm there in from the start, but I have to be involved right at the very start of the process, at stage zero, stage one, RIBA stage, because too many times I'm approached with a set of plans. I've got planning, which, you know, developers can say, oh, can you make it modular? And we can, but any cost benefits of making it modular have kind of gone out the window. I'm trying to kind of fix it into a, you know, square peg in a round hole.
So you can't really retrofit.
You can do it, and I've done it, but basically you just ends up costing the same amount as traditional. But all I'm saying is, if you are going to go down a modular route, you need to bring them on board right at the very start.
Okay.
So my architects can design it with modular in mind. And there's no, you know, it's just a few little tweaks in terms of the grid and the layout, where you put the stairs, but, you know, they don't cross grids and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Very, very basic stuff, but... And in terms of, you know, obviously if you're developing properties, well, it might not be, but one of the big issues is speed, isn't it? So the quicker you can get onto market, then the quicker you can sell it, and you don't have to finance it so long. So the other big benefit is modular is speed. You can do it a lot quicker, you know. So people quote figures between 50% quicker to 10% quicker in terms of the process. You know, I'm at the moment, it really depends, but if you get a modular contractor on board right at the very start, so they've designed it all the way through, and I think, you know, your figure's nearer to 30-35% quicker. But if you get involved at planning stage when it's all designed, and you know, you're probably about 15-20% quicker. So it's kind of, that's the cost benefit.
Mm.
So it can be cheaper. and it can be quicker. But the other thing it can be, it can give you cost certainty, which we spoke about at the start of the conversation, because everything above the ground, I know how much it costs. I've built it, it's in the factory, I've done it before. That's what it is, I'm not reinventing the wheel. Yeah. I've got real good cost data. Below ground is below ground, but the thing with modular is I can parallel build. So while we're in doing the ground in terms of the foundations and finding World War II bombs or whatever's underneath there, you know, whatever, and I've had them all built in London, we're in the factory building it. So you get that cost benefit. And if you do have problems in the ground, then you can build more in the factory and you can find a way around it. It's not sequential. And the other benefit is quality as well. You know, you can really get quality in the factory in terms of, you know, supervision, tradespeople, it's the same trades that are working in the factory all the time, so I get quality. You know, on a traditional contract, people worry about, well, you know, if the contract's not very good. Well, you've just employed a subcontractor you've never worked with. They've got subcontractors and trade labour who you've never seen before. They've just turned up.
He's got no ties to you,
Two days a week, and gee, what a surprise. The quality's a bit of a problem. And, you know, with the skills issues at the moment, you know, the tradesmen just aren't there. We stopped training the tradesmen. At the same time, a lot of the materials and buildings now have been de-skilled, so you get pre-hung doors and, you know, so a lot has been de-skilled, so you don't need the skills anymore. But that final finishing touch is where you need skilled tradesmen.
So, and I think a lot of the things you've just said there are really relevant for the current kind of, I mentioned it earlier, but the context of political uncertainty, because a lot of people are worried about construction material shortages, skill shortages, and I guess in general, in an environment of uncertainty, the more certainty that you can gain through your process, the better. So the other thing is there's this kind of cross-party political will to professionalise the property industry, and that affects investors and it affects developers. And really, I mean, the more standardised you can get, it's almost like the better. So it seems to fit well with the context. How does modular fit in with that political regulatory environment?
Well,
and how can it be useful for investors and developers?
Yeah, well, it's interesting actually, because I've kind of, I never give the government much credit normally, but actually the modular and component design agenda has been really pushed by government. So government realised that actually they want to really kind of see cost benefits and building their estate. Modular and component design is a way forward. You know, they're the biggest client in the UK, and every single construction job they've reinvented the world, wonder why it goes wrong or whatever. You know, it's the same as everyone else. So they're really pushing modular off-site component against all of their estates, you know, education, health, MOD. And what struck me recently, I've been to a few conferences, that the government have got real joined up thinking on this. They've got a strategy, they're really pushing it forward, and I've been really impressed with that actually. And they're basically saying we're going down a component modular route for our buildings, and we want the industry to follow. The issue is capacity in the UK market, if I'm honest with you. You know, it's probably about 5%, and I'm quoting that figure, no one come back and quote me on that, but you know, 5% probably is modular, maybe a bit more in the market at the moment. The way the government's talking, you know, they want 30% or whatever it is, and the factories and the infrastructure is just not there at the moment.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of big international companies circling the market at the moment, saying actually we need to get into the UK market, we need to get in amongst it. Which fascinates me about the large main contractors. I can't understand why they're not piling into modular and offsite, because if you look at all the government policy, maybe they think government's going to change, I don't know. If you look at if you look at all the government policy, it's all pointing down towards component and modular design. So there's this huge business opportunity, and you know, I said I want to be £100 million in 3 years' time. But the only thing stopping me doing that, if I'm honest with you, you know, the way it goes, it'll just be capacity and whether I can get more factories, or whatever. I don't think, in terms of picking up the work and whatever, I actually don't think it's going to be an issue. So that's in terms of political uncertainty, in terms of the modular market, actually, it's quite good at the moment. Brexit, I you know, who knows what's going
to
happen.
I have to say that word. What, I was deliberately avoiding
What does strike me, though, and the sentiment in the industry, and I do a lot of public sector work and I do a bit of commercial side, is it does seem to be quite a bit of work out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And I just think the British public said, you know what, just carry on, it'll be what it'll be. I mean, I'm slightly... The one thing that kind of... No, I'll talk about Brexit, that kind of not worries me, but it's an opportunity, I suppose, is that... if by chance there is a good deal or something comes out of it, I actually worry about the capacity in the UK. Because I think there is, you know, we're pretty busy at the moment, but if actually all of the you know, if by chance it goes well, I think there's a load of work's going to come in. I just don't think there's capacity to be there. And I think we'll have a massive another boom time where people could start charging ridiculous prices and the industry will get a bad name again. So
I should say we're recording this on the 11th of December, just for context.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never know what might change.
Well, exactly, yeah. Could change this afternoon, couldn't we? But yeah, I think as a business owner, I've just taken the decision. We just need to plow on, invest, yeah. Carry on. And, you know, no one's got any crystal balls, no.
And, well, okay, so on that, there's clear benefits for certain types of projects, especially for having just supply chain advantages, the project management in a more efficient way, the time and cost from using modular. What are the potential risks and downsides in modular construction?
I think the potential risk of downside of modular construction is your client or your technical team that are running you don't understand it. So they still try to treat it as a traditional contract.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get into their mind that needs to make decisions early and we're going to get design signed off. They can't get into the mind they have to pay for materials off site. They can't get into the mind that actually they need to get in a contract quicker and they can't control their lawyers to kind of sort stuff out. So everyone's in this mindset of, okay, it's a 3-year construction progress or it's a 18 months construct. We've got all that time to sort all the paperwork and contractual stuff out because we're building it sequentially and get it all sorted. With modular offsite, you can't do that. You need to do it up front and get it on because I've learned to my detriment where, you know, I've ploughed on ahead just to start working in a factory and then have a contract in place because the client's got a program to hit, but they're unwilling to change their processes to hit that program. So it's more education and understanding it. And, you know, you see a lot of modular contractors, companies go bust. And that's primarily down to clients or main contractors not understanding how the business model works and what they need to do it, you know.
Just like with any kind of manufacturing facility, it's like cash flow management.
Well, it's cash flow, yeah. And so if I'm charging ahead in the factory and building it, and they said, oh, yeah, well, fine, well, we'll do it. And then you come and say, oh, can you pay me now? And I said, oh, we can't quite do that because we're on contracts and the banks won't release the money, blah, blah, blah. And you're going, well, that's a little bit late, guys, because I've just mm-hmm. committed to this. And part of that's my problem as well. So, you know, one of the things I've learned is I've become a lot more robust in saying, no, I need a proper order, I need it fully signed off, I need it designed up front. And, you know, and I just hope some of the other modular competitors, and, you know, they're equally as strong, and I think they are, but it just takes one job or one client and it can topple you over. One of the reasons why I just made the decision not to work for main contractors, you know, so I'll get approached by the main contractors saying, oh, can you produce the modular bit? But then you're reliant on their cash flow, you know, issues with Carillion and some of the big guys out there, that you know, they just don't pay you. You know.
Like supplying groceries for Tesco, is you're just
yeah, no, exactly.
You're going to be on their terms. Yeah, you're not going to be in
the you're much better opening up your own shop and getting people coming by yourself because and getting straight to the customer. Because you know, I do a lot of work direct for the government. The government are great payers. You know, they one thing they do, they pay on time within the allotted time. A lot of times they pay early. But when you're further down the food chain, then you would never know that.
Mm.
You know, you wouldn't realise that because you're getting 100 days, 90 days payment terms, even though the government have paid the tier one contract within 20 days or 30 days, whatever it is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned that a big part of, I suppose, the challenge is around education and communication of what the process is. If investors or developers who are listening are interested in exploring modular further or maybe even using it on a project, are there any great resources you could point them to learn a bit more about it and maybe decide whether to use that for their future projects?
That's a good question. I think there's a number of kind of like not trade organisations but kind of organisations called Offsite. You type that into Google, that'll come up with, you know, the industry players and whatever. You could always just give me a call.
I was going to say, but my next question was if they're interested in exploring it and want to speak to you, what's the best way that people can kind of follow what you guys are up to and get in touch?
Yeah, well, so we're all kind of, I can't even say, was it media up, multimedia?
However you want to say it, I think, yeah.
Well, we're on Facebook and LinkedIn and Reds 10, so you type in.
Multimedia up is great.
Yeah,
yeah.
What is the word? I kind of,
social media.
Social media, that's it, yeah, sorry. Social media up. And also, obviously, our website, we've got latest news.
Yeah.
And you've got, if you go onto my website, you've got contact details of Duncan, who's our kind of business development guys. But if anyone wants to get in contact with me, more than happy. Yeah, more than happy to talk about it. You know, I'm really pushing to be the kind of the one that changes perceptions, the one that builds the buildings that people look at and go, oh, I didn't realise that was modular and offsite. And you say, well, yeah, it was. Because, you know, no one talks anymore about, oh, it's steel frame, it's timber frame, it's concrete frame. You know, no contractor says we're going to do that. And I want to be in a position in 3 or 4 years and no one talks about it, it's modular frames. They just come with point red to 10 because we build it quicker, cheaper, best quality, and they like working with us.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your insights. So to stay in touch or find out more, it's The Return Podcast on Facebook, returnpodcast.com, the.return.podcast on Instagram. And if you've enjoyed or learned something from this episode, feel free to get in touch with Paul or leave a review where you get your podcast from, as this really helps other people find and benefit from the podcast. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Bye.